Live from New York City, it's the Gary Noel Show. And now, your host, Gary Noel.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noel, and I'd like to welcome you to this program today. We begin with the latest on health and healing. Can we say that an organically grown tomato is better than a conventionally grown tomato? Diet soda. What does it do that's bad? A lot. A mushroom-supplemented soybean extract shows therapeutic promise for advanced prostate cancer. A lot we can do with oregano. A lot. It's really good. We can grow it and benefit from it. And why aren't we using more sulfur compounds in helping us heal from viral and bacterial infections and cancer? These are just some of the issues I'll discover that can make a difference in our lives. My guest in the second part of our program will be Lynn Kasten. He is arguably one of the most informed historians on UFO phenomena. And we will take a new look at UFO research. What is its status? What can be confirmed? And is our government trying to cover it up? And why? I'll also give you the people who are already convinced that UFOs exist. And there are some real heavyweights in here, including some astronauts. And even a piece in the New York Times talks about what went on in Russia. From our public health issue, 6 in 10 people worldwide lack access to flush toilets or other adequate sanitation. And you remember when I was saying repeatedly that what we're not looking at with the shale gas problem, the hydrofracking, is that it's all fraud. It's a bubble. Well, all bubbles expand. The people who are very greedy or can be talked into thinking about how much money they can make if they just invest $1 million or whatever, they're going to be the ones who cash out early. Everyone else, they're going to get hit when the bubble explodes. Who's joined me now? Well, how about Post Carbon Institute and Energy Policy Forum? We'll talk about what they just released today. From our fascism in America, the National Defense Authorization Act, preemptive prosecution is coming to a town near you, from Charlotte Silver. Now imagine, remember the film with Tom Cruise, where they would figure out who was going to commit a crime before anyone committed a crime and then arrest that person? They're about to do that, or actually are doing it. And according to Mike Adams in Natural News, he's come up with a report that says the Department of Homeland Security is training to shoot pregnant women, old men, and children with guns. And the training is, quote, to eliminate any hesitation. And a special company, a private company called Law Enforcement Training, Inc., has been selling millions of dollars worth of what is called no hesitation targets to the Department of Homeland Security. What does that mean? Well, it means that the average person, when faced with a group of angry citizens who are simply exercising their constitutional rights to protest something, you would think twice about how much force to apply. But what if you could apply deadly force and know there would be no consequences? Because no one who is applying deadly force or assassinations or killing people, if they're doing so through the CIA or the FBI or Homeland Security or anything else, is ever held accountable, ever. So are they preparing for some form of confrontation in the United States? I don't see that happening. I don't see any confrontation in the United States happening at all. Around the world, yes. Not in some places, not in England, but certainly you're going to see it in Greece, Spain, Portugal, Italy, France, possibly in Ireland, but all over the Middle East, yes. In the United States, not in this lifetime. We will become a complete to total totalitarian state, and all those who have been mourning will be challenged. But the rest of the people, as long as you give them their television, they'll be happy. Let's begin. Reasonableness suggests that before we make choices what goes into our mind and our body, that we ask ourselves, what is the likely outcome? And unfortunately, more often than not, the outcome is not something good if we live our lives robotically, as many people do. I remember counseling someone just this week over the telephone, and the person is 74 years of age, has at least four different life-ending diseases. And I was brought in at the end by the family in intervention, see if I could help. So I spent a couple of hours with the person talking. And then when I suggested to the brother, here's what you should do as far as diet, and I suggest hiring someone who just comes in daily and makes the juices and foods and blends up the supplements and make sure he gets it and make sure that he gets out and walks with him, someone to help. And about 2 hours later, I get a call saying, this is going to run me $400 for these supplements. I said, yes. So, well, that's a lot of money. And I said, well, in speaking with your brother, he was telling me about his diet and his drinking and how often he drinks and what he drinks and what he eats. And he eats out a lot, doesn't like to eat at home. And his average meal out was around $35, with drinks, $50. So you are looking at the total accumulation of what a person spends to get sick, and it runs into the hundreds of thousands of dollars for the average person, over $1 million for those who have more money to spend. And that does not include the cost of marijuana or cocaine. And so, on the one hand, you don't say, gee whiz, how much money in my life have I wasted on cigarettes, drinking, coffee, burgers, fries, pizzas, sugar, soft drinks? How much? Oh, and I'm not even including my heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, amputations, gangrene. But the moment you're asked to spend an extra 7 cents for an organic apple or buy some supplements, suddenly it's as if you've been asked to stick a needle in your ear. What is the issue? The vitamins, diet, juicing is about health and regaining it. When you look in the mirror today, what you're looking at is nothing today. It is 74 years of bad choices. Not once did anyone ask, what was the cost of these choices? Isn't it amazing what happens when we ask, what is the cost of getting healthy? And then ask yourself, what is the cost of leaving a bad relationship if you're unhappy? That's going to lead to stress that can lead to disease. Then if you were suddenly wheeled into a hospital and you were resuscitated, and they shot some magnesium sulfate into you and adrenaline, and you're laying there, and someone says, almost died of a massive heart attack. Man, this guy should know about stress. And you think to yourself, what would have happened had I have changed the stressful circumstances of my life? What would be different today? What is this going to cost me? A near-death experience? My health ruined? What does it take to wake the average person up to realize there's a cost to every single thought and action in life? Different way of thinking. That brings me to this. From Lila Alphonse. Study, diet soda increases the risk of diabetes. Why do we still drink this stuff? I'll quote this. Yet another study confirms what people have been saying for ages. Stop drinking diet soda. like right now, drinking just one 12-ounce can of an artificially sweetened fizzy drink per week can increase your risk of type 2 diabetes by 33%. And given that most people don't stop at a single weekly serving, your real risk of diabetes can actually be much higher. But diet soda also can increase your risk of depression. The study, done and conducted through France's National Institute of Health and Medical Research, and covered 66,000 middle-aged women whose dietary habits were monitored for 15 years. And here's what they found. The results were unexpected, they said. They knew that consuming a lot of sugar was not good, but they thought that as long as it was a diet soft drink or a light soft drink, it wouldn't be a problem. Well, it was. Much higher risk of developing type 2 diabetes. And those who drank 100% natural squeezed fruit juices instead had no risk at all. Women who chose artificially flavored soft drinks usually drink twice as many of them as women who choose regular soda or juice. And, quote, yet when an equal quantity is consumed, the risk of contracting diabetes is higher for light or diet drinks than for non-light, non-diet drinks, the researchers found. Also, drinking sweetened beverages increases the risk of becoming overweight, which is itself is a risk factor in developing diabetes. And then they found that it had other negative impacts as well. So we should ask ourselves, if you drink something or eat something that you should reasonably know is not good, why are you doing it? What do you think the outcome is going to be? Because you know in our society, nobody just eats one French fries or smokes one cigarette or does one thing. We develop that into a pattern and we justify it and we rationalize it and we excuse it and we forgive it and we defend it. But then one day, there is a price to pay. Then what do we do? Now, one thing that we should be doing is having healthy sleep. But unfortunately, most Americans don't. This is the latest from medical news from the University of Pennsylvania and the Perelman School of Medicine there. And it says, healthy diet, healthy sleep. Unhealthy diet, unhealthy sleep. And imagine healthy eating. Generally, people eat earlier. Ideally, your lightest meal of the day, your smallest meal of the day should be dinner. Ideally, eaten between 5 and 7 p.m. You should have at least 3 hours and ideally 4 hours of an empty stomach, or at least no new food going in the stomach. And always take some digestive enzymes if you've had problems with digestion after your final meal. Your larger meal should be your midday meal, your noon to 2 o'clock meal. And a liquid breakfast is a great way to start the day. If you find your blood sugars lowered, you find your fatigue level increased, no problem. Just have an additional juice or piece of fruit or some handful of nuts or seeds at that midpoint, in mid-morning or mid-afternoon. And if you absolutely positively must have something at night, then have some popcorn. Organic popcorn will not affect your digestion or your blood sugar. Here's what this says, published in the peer-reviewed journal Appetite. It says, people who eat a large variety of foods considered an indicator of a healthy diet are also the ones with the healthiest sleep patterns. Quote, although many of us inherently recognize there is a relationship between what we eat and how we sleep, there have been very few scientific studies that have explored this connection, especially in the real world. And there are differences in the diet of those who report shorter sleep, longer sleep, or standard sleep. Now, keep in mind, there's a reason for this, and I'll explain it. When you're eating a traditional meal, normally there are larger meals in the evening, And today, with our social networking and our workloads and our stress levels, we're eating later and later. As a result, we tend to eat stressful, meaning we are sitting down and we have a lot of issues in our mind. We then no longer control portion size nor quality of what we eat. We're intentionally choosing something that gives us comfort. For that moment that we're eating it, we'll feel okay. Those foods tend to be higher in fat and are, more often than not, animal proteins or sugary foods. So when you see people eating a large fat meal in the evening, there's no question that's going to be in their stomach when they go to bed. The trouble is, if they understood the anatomy of the body and they look at the stomach, when a person's lying down, it looks like a pear on its side. Now, you have two entrances to the stomach, entrance and exit. You have the cardiac sphincter muscle, and you have the pyloric sphincter muscle, one at the top, one at the bottom. Food goes in at the top and comes out at the bottom, then goes into the intestine. When you're sleeping and food is in your stomach, your metabolism slows down about 10%. Your blood pressure goes down. Your pulse rate goes down. Your breathing is more shallow. Now, that means your digestion slows down substantially. And that's why a lot of people have trouble sleeping through the night. They have food in their stomach. So when you go to bed, if you go to bed with an empty stomach and the food is already being metabolized, then you're going to have a greater catabolic activity, meaning the body will cleanse the dead cells, the bacteria, and the fibrous material out of your system in a more healthy way, and therefore you can repair the damage done to the cells and the DNA during your nighttime. All that is good. So, smallest meal in the evening. Earlier eat, the better it is. There's been some challenge about what is healthier, organic or non-organic. I now have 38 studies published in peer-reviewed journals showing there's more nutrients in organic. Also, the newest studies show that organic is more sustainable and you get the same or even better yields per acre. So all the original myths that they used to claim why genetic engineering or traditional farming was better than organic farming are simply wrong. This is one more. This is published in the PLOS One, one of the most respected medical and scientific journals in the world, and it's from the Federal University of Ceará in Brazil, and it says the following: organic tomatoes accumulate more vitamin C and sugars than conventionally grown fruit. The biochemical properties of organic tomatoes may be different because of stressful growth conditions. And that means that the tomato may not be as large, but it's more nutrient dense, and therefore healthier and sweeter. So, one more reason to buy organic produce. Also, children should be given DHA, which is a fraction of, well, along with EPA, the essential fatty acids, in the omega-3 fatty acids. And for the parents out there, if you just want to take some omega-3 fatty acid concentrate, like a teaspoon, and put it into a blender, it now comes in strawberry and cherry, and you can even get it with probiotics, so it's really easy to get it into your kids. Here's the latest studies on what it will do. It can enhance behavior, attention span, spelling, hyperactivity, it can calm them down, and enhance vision. All good things. So let's get the omega-3s into our children. For those of us who've been studying the impact of cancer in our society, and that we've really lost the war on cancer as an official war, but we've made major progress from understanding environmental impact. And we had the women's movement to thank for that, because they really led that. And now we have the complementary doctors who who are using natural, non-toxic ways of helping people with cancer with some substantial results. And one of the products, just one, as a part of an overall strategy, is genistein. Genistein, combined with polysaccharides, are extremely beneficial. This is from mainstream science, Science Daily, and published in the peer-reviewed journal Endocrine-Related Cancer. Now listen to this. I'm going to quote it verbatim, and this sounds like it would come from someone in the alternative health field, but this is from the main halls of mainstream orthodox science. Quote, "A natural non-toxic product called genistein, combined polysaccharide, or GCP, which is commercially available in health food stores, could help lengthen the life expectancy of certain prostate cancer patients, University of Davis researchers have found. Men with prostate cancer that had spread to other parts of the body, known as metastatic cancer, who have had their testosterone lowered with drug therapy, are most likely to benefit. The study recently published in Endocrine-Related Cancer was conducted in prostate cancer cells and in mice. Lowering of testosterone, also known as androgen deprivation therapy, has long been the standard of care for patients with metastatic prostate cancer, but life expectancies vary widely for those who undergo this treatment. Testosterone is an androgen, the generic term for any compound that stimulates or controls development and maintenance of male characteristics by binding to androgen receptors. The current findings hold promise for the GCP therapy as a way to extend life expectancy of patients with low response to androgen deprivation therapy." And then it goes through all the different professors who were a part of this study. Wow. Isn't that good? So something, mushrooms, like the maitake defraction and soybean extract, genistein. We in the alternative field have been discussing this, and doctors and therapists and those of us who counsel people have been using it for decades. But they're catching up, and that's a good sign. And here's another sign that they're catching up. This is from the Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit. Resveratrol shows promise to protect hearing and cognition. Quote, "A substance found in red grapes and red wine may have the potential to protect against hearing and cognitive decline. The study shows that healthy rats are less likely to suffer the long-term effects of noise-induced hearing loss when given resveratrol before being exposed to loud noise for a long period of time. Our latest study focuses on resveratrol and its effects on bioinflammation, the body's response to injury, and something that is believed to be the cause of many health problems, including Alzheimer's, cancer, aging, and hearing loss." That was Dr. Sedman, Division of Otologic and Neurologic Surgery, Department of Head and Neck Surgery at Henry Ford Hospital. So, quote, "Resveratrol is a very powerful chemical that seems to protect against the body's inflammatory process that relates to aging." You bet. And this was published in their peer-reviewed journal. So think of all of you who every day are taking either resveratrol supplements or eating your red, blue, or black grapes or drinking a non-alcohol red wine, organic without the sulfates, or taking your fruit powders, which have lots of resveratrol in them, more than what they use. So isn't it nice? They're catching up. I'm Gary Noll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. And now to our public health part of our program, where we take an issue that we all should be concerned about. This is from Science Daily. It says the following. "It may be the 21st century with all its technological marvels, but 6 out of every 10 people on Earth still do not have access to flush toilets or other adequate sanitation that protects the user and the surrounding community from harmful health effects." The research published in the Environmental Science and Technology Journal says the number of people without access to improving sanitation is double the previous estimate. Well, that's serious. The New Estimate used what the authors regarded as a more realistic definition from the standard of global health. Now, why is this important? Because think of what we could do if we took away the money we were giving to the military-industrial complex and we put it directly into programs of improving water, wells, hydration, and sanitation in crowded communities in India and Africa and Asia. Do you realize how many people's lives we would save and the quality of life of those? Because otherwise, the person is end up playing in, like children, or being exposed to pollutants in the water, and then they get sick, then they need medical care, and then it overburdens the whole system, and then a lot of people can't get care because there's too many people and not enough places to be helped. So we could just be doing a lot of good just by reallocating some of our resources. Thus, bend a dinner. Ministers serve bend food. From the staff writers of Terra Daily, I'll quote this. The green beans are fresh, the broccoli crunchy, and the baby corn sweet. But having failed cosmetic test of international supermarkets, the Kenyan-grown food was hurled out as waste. On Tuesday, however, vegetables considered too ugly for shop shelves were served at a special dinner for 100 global environmental ministers and top-level delegations to highlight the scandal of large-scale but entirely unnecessary food wastage. The meal, held at the Nairobi-based UN Environmental Program, was organized by anti-food waste campaigner Tristram Stewart, who collected some 1,600 kilograms of unwanted fruits and vegetables in Kenya for the meal. Now, why is this important? Because each year in the United States, just in the state of California, you throw away enough food that went bad after people purchased it that you could feed over 10 million people. We've been doing this for a long time. I used to go to supermarkets on the Upper West Side in the morning, and I would ask the people who were the vegetable managers and the store manager, could I have all the trimmings, because I was going to take it to a church around the corner that then served meals at noon for homeless people. And they all agreed, so I would go in and I would fill up a dozen giant garbage bags, completely healthy fruits and vegetables. Not a thing wrong with them, except that they frequently, the lettuce came in too large to be stacked, and so they would trim out all the other outer leaves. Or sometimes the fruits, like oranges or apples, the apples might have a little scab on them. It's called scaby. And nothing wrong with that. It's where the worm eats its way out of the apple, and then a scab forms afterwards to protect the apple. Nothing wrong with it. But they'd throw it away. Or the orange might be a little speckled, but it has to be speckled. Organic oranges, and I have over 100 organic orange trees and grapefruit trees and lemon trees, they're never uniformly colored because whatever's on the inside doesn't get the same amount of exposure of sun as the outside, and therefore it won't be uniform. They throw it away. So I collected all this, and then I would take it around to the church, and then they would juice it for people and make it into soups and salads and stews, whatever. Why can't we do that today? So here's what I'm going to do. I'm asking the people in this audience, how about you, no one else, just you, going to your local health food stores? Or if you don't live near a health food store, your food co-op or farmer's market, and ask them, can you have any of the trimmings or those which are cosmetically not going to be used because you don't think people will buy them, and then give those to some homeless shelter so they can feed people with them. Now, if each of us did it, then think of how many people we could be helping. All right? We should never be throwing this stuff away, but people are not aware that it's being thrown away, and so therefore They don't know that there's a source of food that could feed tens of millions of Americans. Healthy food. Now, of course, if it's your local health food store, it's even healthier because it hasn't been sprayed. All right, just a thought. Hopefully some of you will do that and then become a more spiritually aligned activist, what we talked about yesterday on the program. From issues, for those who are wondering, why is it that we never talk about reality when it comes to 40% of Americans? Why? Because 40% of Americans, according to Dave Johnson of Nation of Change, make less than 1968 minimum wage. Let me just count. 78, 88, 98, 28. We're talking about 45 years ago, people made a bigger amount, larger amount than what we do today. And it's right there in the charts. And that's one of the reasons that people are working harder and making less. And finally, before we take our break, I want to read a report here. This is from Charlotte Silver. This is part of our Fascism in America series, a 52-week series, to remind you that we are becoming a fascist state. We are. A lot of people do not want to hear this and refuse to acknowledge it, but there are also tens of millions of Americans who are in tune. I'll quote this. It's short. On May 16th, 2012, days before the NATO summit was scheduled to take place in Chicago, the local police arrested 9 Occupy activists who had come together from around the country to protest the convention. In the U.S., due process, one of the defining features of a democratic judicial process, continues to be badly burdened. Obama fights tooth and nail to push through the National Defense Authorization Act, which allows indefinite detention of U.S. citizens, and the definition of terrorism has expanded its unwieldy scope, casting a widening net that ensures more and more people are captured in its snare. The U.S. has pursued domestic terrorism by practicing preemptive prosecution, that is, going after individuals who have committed no crime, but are alleged to possess an ideology that might dispose them to commit acts of protest. Maintaining it can and should be in the business of divining intent, the government decimates crucial elements of the U.S. justice system. Thus, in cases where terrorism is charged, prosecutors need not prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, rather only the defendant's potential for committing a crime sometime in the future. That's all that's needed in order to convict. And then it goes into what they did about people who just came to protest, how they were targeted, how they were arrested. They had committed no crime, but that didn't help them. So that's something to think about. And then there's this. This is from Mike Adams, Natural News. Department of Homeland Security trains to shoot pregnant women, old men, children with guns. I really didn't want to cover this subject, but a warning has to be issued to Natural News readers. InfoWorld's writer Paul Joseph Watson has uncovered proof that a U.S.-based company called Law Enforcement Training Inc. has been selling millions of dollars worth of no-hesitation targets to the Department of Homeland Security. These targets are used to train Department of Homeland Security employees to shoot American citizens, and they depict pregnant women, old men, children, even young moms with guns. The purpose of the target, according to the company that sells them, is to, quote, eliminate any hesitation, end quote, that U.S. government employees might normally feel in shooting to kill pregnant women, children, and old men. InfoWars reports that they have been informed that no-hesitation targets are, quote, strictly for Department of Homeland Security and other law enforcement agencies, end quote. Well, how stupid do they think we are? This puzzle wasn't difficult to assemble, folks. We've got the U.S. government already on record purchasing 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition to be used domestically. Inside the United States, the government is also purchasing thousands of full-auto assault rifles, calling them personal defense weapons. On top of that, there are hundreds of thousands of multi-body coffins being stored right now at FEMA camp facilities, and there's also strong evidence that FEMA camps are being activated, with core staff coming online. And that's what he has to say. Just another report. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Just so that you don't forget the power of radiation going into the environment and what it means when it goes into the air and to the water, and somehow in our capacity for hubris and denial, we simply assume that it must not be a problem because we don't hear about it. Fukushima. We should, because that radiation, it's moving, and lots of it. Even though, based upon the principles of dilution, it is not as concentrated as it goes further out as it was at the base, it's still very toxic, which means that all the fish and all the organisms in the ocean that are consumed, when you start using that, you're taking in radiation that your body has no way of handling. And it's not far before the entire Pacific Ocean, in the direction of the United States, right up to our shores, are completely radioactive. Listen in to a group
of
scientists.
Our study deals with one of the consequences of the disastrous earthquake and subsequent tsunami that hit Japan in March 2011. Caused by the explosions and meltdowns in the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plants, large amounts of radioactive material, including long-living isotopes such as cesium-137, were released into the environment. Contaminated waters entered the Pacific Ocean by atmospheric deposition and direct discharge of coolant in the weeks after the catastrophe. In this study, we investigate the long-term fate of these waters in the Pacific Ocean using numerical model experiments. The model simulates the ocean currents with very high resolution. It thus captures much of the intense eddying flows along the Kuroshio. To simulate the dispersal of the contaminated water by the ocean currents, we use an idealized tracer behaving like a dye with a half-life of 30 years, which we injected into the coastal waters of Fukushima. We want to emphasize that our approach is restricted to the physical spreading and does not account for possible biological effects, for example, adhesion of isotopes to sinking organic matter. Neither does our model assimilate any ocean data, therefore we do not account for the actual state of the local currents at the time of the release. However, the initial state turned out to be of minor importance for the tracer spreading after 2 to 3 years. The following animation shows the spreading of our dye at the ocean surface. The color represents the concentration of the tracer relative to the initial concentration in the coastal area of Fukushima at the end of the injection period. The tracer invades the highly energetic Kuroshio regime within the first weeks after the release and starts spreading meridionally due to the eddies dominating the flow field in this area. After 1 year, maximum concentrations are diluted by 2 orders of magnitude and already cross the dateline, further heading east. The southern edge of the tracer cloud reaches the Hawaiian Islands after about 2 years, while the northern edge has begun to enter the Bering Sea. Meanwhile, concentrations near Japan have been dropping significantly due to replacement by less contaminated waters through the Kuroshio, separating the main cloud into a northern and a southern part. After 4 years, the maximum concentration has dropped by 3 orders of magnitude, and the entire northern Pacific is filled with a certain amount of tracer. When the peak concentration reaches the North American coast after about 5 to 6 years, it has been diluted by 4 orders of magnitude. The concentration levels from now on tend to homogenize over the entire basin.
So you heard what they're saying, not a word in the American media, because what would you do? There's no way to depollute the radiation, which is going to be around for a long time, in the Pacific Ocean and right up against the shore, which means it'll also be going inland, Washington, Oregon, California. My guest is on hold now. This should be an interesting discussion. Let's say hello to Ken Kasten. He's been involved in investigating UFO phenomena since the mid-1960s, when he joined the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, then the country's most prestigious organization researching UFO reports and exposing them to the press. He's a graduate of Cornell University, served in the U.S. Air Force Aviation Program, and he also is an author, The Secret History of Extraterrestrials. Nice to have you with us today, Ken.
Nice to be here.
Two recent news accounts that I thought were of interest. One's from the New York Times recently. Here's what it says. Or not recently, but here's what it says. UFO landing is fact, not fantasy, the Russians insist, by Esther Fine, special to the New York Times. And it says, it's not a joke, nor a hoax, nor a sign of mental instability, nor an attempt to drum up local tourism by drawing the curious. The Soviet press, TASS, insisted today in discussions of what it called an extraterrestrial visit to southern Russia. Residents of the city of Voronezh insisted today that lanky, three-eyed extraterrestrial creatures had indeed landed in a local park. And then it goes on to talk about this and how a lieutenant and others, all these people, testified that it was real. Then we have this. This is a renowned U.S. naval commander reveals stunning Roswell crash secret. Quote from Anthony Bregaglia. One of the most acclaimed naval scientists in U.S. military history has stated unequivocally that the Roswell crash of 1947 was not of a balloon, nor was it a hoax. Based on evidence he had seen in an official capacity, the commander was instead convinced that the crash represents an event with deep implications for all of mankind, universally acknowledged as the grandfather of satellite technology. And a close associate of Dr. Wernher von Braun, Commander George Hoover, has revealed the truth about Roswell is far stronger than we have ever dared to think. And then it goes into his remarkable background. So this was not...
I can go one better than that, Gary.
Okay.
I have in my new book the entire transcript of the briefing to Ronald Reagan of what happened at Roswell, and it validates everything.
Yeah, put it into proper context, so that we, the people in this audience who are not familiar with what happened at Roswell in July of 1947, Roswell, New Mexico, perhaps the most famous American UFO event. Summarize then the events and the controversy over alien bodies found, and then tell us about the creation of a secret committee by President Harry Truman called Majestic 12 to research recovered spacecraft and the four bodies from the Roswell crash.
Right, right. That's exactly what happened. The importance of Roswell had more to do with the fact that one of the aliens survived. That was the major event that changed everything, because we interrogated that alien, we learned to communicate with him, we brought him to Los Alamos, and ultimately that connection led to us sending 12 Americans on an alien spaceship to the planet Serpo in 1965. So the story radiates out from just a simple crash to an actual diplomatic exchange program with an alien race. So it's quite a remarkable story.
What proof do we have?
We have the entire transcript of the revelation from the DIA, from ex-DIA intelligence operatives, who revealed the whole story in 2005. And my new book is actually based on that revelation.
Okay, but let's go through it step by step, because what you just stated will sound incredulous to someone who is looking for some hard proof. Take us step by step through the hard proof. Don't just jump over facts to say, a crash occurred and suddenly we're on another planet. No one's going to accept that. Take us step by step.
Well, the fact that the CIA briefed President Reagan on the entire matter in 1981, I think, and we have that full transcript, I think should be sufficient proof. I don't know what other proof we could give you.
Read from the transcript. Give us some specifics from the transcript. Who gave you the transcript? How did it get made? Why is it that we're not aware of it?
The transcript is covered completely in my new book. I can read from it if you would like.
Yes, do.
Let's see. Hold on. Okay, I can bring it up here. You know that the book, The Day After Roswell, was written by Colonel Philip Corso. Are you familiar with that?
My audience is not. Please share insights on that.
Okay. Let's see.
While you're looking for it, let me mention some other people who believe that alien life and UFOs do exist. I'll just give you 10 top ones. Professor Stephen Hawking, last year, the revered physicist and cosmologist, suggested that extraterrestrials almost certainly exist, but that humans should be taking steps to avoid them rather than seek them out. That's what he said. Then Lord Rees, the astronomer royal, last year, said he believed aliens existed. Then we also had Edgar Mitchell. Now, he, to me, is one of the most credible.
Absolutely. Edgar Mitchell is one of the most important people involved in this whole matter.
Because
and he's very, very frank and very open about it now. You know, he used to be a little guarded in his revelations, but no longer. If you go out to YouTube, you'll see a new video that he put out that gives that whole story.
Just more specifically, the NASA astronaut claimed in 2009 that alien life exists, but the U.S. government was covering up the evidence. And he was a part of the 1971 Apollo 14 moon mission. And he made the claims in a talk in the film, the fifth annual X conference. And he also said that he had attempted to investigate the 1947 Roswell incident, which some believe was the crash landing of a UFO, but had been thwarted by military authorities. He said, quote, "We're not alone. Our destiny, in my opinion, and we might as well get started with it, is to become a part of a planetary community. We should be ready to reach out beyond our planet and beyond our solar system to find out what is really going on out there."
Absolutely.
I urge those who are doubtful, read the books and read the lore and start to understand what has really been going on, because it is really no doubt that that we have been visited. Jimmy Carter, former president, but also General Douglas MacArthur, the Korean Second World War soldier, said in 1955, he said, quote, "The next war will be an interplanetary war. The nations of the Earth must someday make a common front against attack by people from other planets. The politics of the future will be cosmic or interplanetary." And then we have Air Chief Marshal Lord Downing, the Second World War RAF fighter commander during the Battle of Britain, once said that UFOs, quote, "I'm convinced these objects do exist and that they are not manufactured by any nations on Earth." Then Ronald Reagan, actually himself, claimed, he said, quote, "I looked out the window and saw white light. It was zigzagging around. I went up to the pilot and said, 'Have you ever seen anything like this?' And he was shocked and said, 'Nope.' And I said, 'Let's follow it.' And we followed for several minutes. It was bright white light. We followed it to Bakersfield. And all of a sudden, to our utter amazement, it went straight up into the heavens. When I got off the plane, I told Nancy about it," end quote. And also former president of Russia, Mikhail Gorbachev. So those are some of the people who are in positions to know.
Yeah.
So give us some of the transcripts now, if you've located.
Okay, I'm going to jump into the middle of it. The briefing was given to Mr. President Reagan in 1981 by somebody who identified himself as the caretaker. And he gave the fact that he had 35 years of CIA experience, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just going to jump into the meat of it, okay?
Go ahead.
He said, "Mr. President, as was mentioned earlier, I must say that this briefing has the highest classification within the U.S. government. I will start with a slide presentation. I have most of this briefing on the slides, but I also have an outline that I have passed out to each person in attendance." Casey was also there. The head of the CIA was in attendance. "The United States of America has been visited by extraterrestrial visitors since 1947. We have proof of that. However, we also have some proof that Earth has been visited for many thousands of years by various races of extraterrestrial visitors. Mr. President, I'll just refer to these visits, to those visits as ETs. In July 1947, a remarkable event occurred in New Mexico. During a storm, two ET spacecraft crashed. One crashed southwest of Corona, New Mexico, and one crashed near Dayton, New Mexico. And I have some plates in the book. The U.S. Army eventually found both sites and recovered all the debris and one live alien. I'll refer to this alien, this live alien, as EBE-1. The president says, what does this mean? Do we have codes or a special terminology for this? Mr. President, EBE means extraterrestrial biological entity. It was a code designated to this creature by the U.S. Army back in those days. This creature was not human, and we had to decide on the term for it. So scientists designated the creature as EBE-1, not very imaginative. We also referred to it as NOAA. There was different terminology used by various aspects of the U.S. military and the intelligence community back then. And it goes on and on and on. I have the entire transcript in my book, in my new book.
And what was Reagan's response?
Oh, he says, do we or did we have others? The number one would seem to indicate we had others. Yes, we had others back then. The term was EBE and no number designation. We'll explain how the others came into our knowledge.
What happened to that extraterrestrial?
Okay, that's, and based on that is the beginning of a whole new story, which ultimately resulted in us sending 12 Americans to a planet that was 40 light years away.
How did that happen? How did they get there since we didn't have that technology?
They were sent on an alien spacecraft.
All right.
The aliens took them on their spacecraft. And that's the subject of my new book called Secret Journey to Planet Serpo.
Okay, well, what has happened with the people who visited it? Have any of them confirmed this? Has anyone come forward to talk about it?
The secrecy surrounding that was incredible, and they were not even, their names were taken away from them. They were given just numbers. They spent 13 years on that planet, came back in 1978. They were exposed to tremendous radiation while on Serpo, and that shortened their lives considerably. So they all died kind of young. The last one died in 2002 in Florida. And everything has been kept under tight secrecy control. It's all in the in a vault at Bowling Air Force Base in Washington. So we learned a tremendous amount of information from that connection. And we developed some incredible technology. They were very helpful to our scientists and to our government. And a lot has happened since that event.
How many people today within the military or within the intelligence community have come forward with firsthand experience that proof that Roswell was not a hoax and proof that an extraterrestrial was live? Outside of the transcripts, are there any people who could actually speak on the record?
Well, you know, Gary, there are so many books now. I would recommend Schmidt's book about Roswell. The information out there now is almost completely, covers the subject completely. There's hardly anything left that's secret. I mean, do you know the number of books on Roswell by qualified authors out there? It's unbelievable. So I don't think it's secret anymore. I think it's mainstream at this point. We know about Area 51. We know about Roswell, and a lot of it they want us to know because there is a public acclimation program out there by the military for the slow release of this information. They don't want it all dumped on us in one great event because the cultural shock would be incredible. So it's been leaked slowly but surely over the years. And this particular program, Project Serpo, was leaked by very highly placed DIA, ex-DIA, and DIA officials. And it was done 25 years to the day after the final report was written because government law requires that this information can only remain secret for 25 years. And so they waited for that to expire.
Recently, in this past year, the president of Russia claimed that UFOs were real. What was the feedback on that?
You know, on the internet and in the circuits of these people who the UFO circuits, people who are interested in this, It's well known. I mean, there's no longer any doubt about the fact that UFO, we're way past that phase of looking at lights in the sky, Gary. We're way past that now. Now we're talking about what kind of arrangements and what kind of agreements we have made with extraterrestrials, because we have made them. It started with President Eisenhower. And so we've been dealing with them for a long time.
See, you're starting with an assumption that we are fully aware of all this, and it's official, and the vast majority of the public certainly believes that UFOs are possible or exist, because many people have had sightings that could not be explained away, or at least they are confident that what they saw was a UFO. But it doesn't mean it's official. The government still denies that UFOs exist, so it's not on the front page of any official magazine or any official news service that they have come forward with any of the information that you and others who are interested in the subject have come. So I believe that we have to still lay out the case as best as possible, because there's also been a lot of fakes. There was a fake documentary. But I've had my own personal experience in this. And I'll talk about that on another show, because we don't have time today. But I believe that it's important just to put the documents in a position, and anyone who's really qualified, not the researchers, but the people who would have had access, and so we can all interview these people. Because trying to find people who were part of it to come forward and say, yes, I saw this, I witnessed that, that's not an easy situation, even with all the books.
I think that the best book on that subject would be Don Schmidt's book, The Roswell Witness, because a lot of them are dead now, unfortunately. There are a few who are still living, and Don hunted them down, and I think if you read his book, you'll get the very latest on the Roswell event and people who were there and who talked about it. You know, many of them took the secrets to their deathbed because they were so convinced that their families would be killed if they spoke about it. But many did speak about it, and Don's book, I think, is the best source for that.
We appreciate being on, Len. Len Kasten, Kasten, The Secret History of Extra Trails, and his website is et-secrethistory.com. I'm Gary Nall. We're up to the end of this program. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now, let's continue with TalkBack, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I'll give you a little postscript to this. I was given a call one day by a person who said, I have some information, can I see you? And I said, what information? And he said, I can't talk about it over the phone. And so I had him come to a neutral location, and there were four of them. And he showed me some photographs, and he said that this was a crash of a UFO on Long Island, and that he and some others were volunteer firefighters and had been there. And one of the guys had snapped some pictures, and one of the other guys had taken a little piece of cloth, and there were some small dead aliens, and this was material from one of their outfits. And they were told that they cannot talk about this, and they were warned it was national security, and national security was all over the place. And I said, well, you realize that national security will be listening to every single phone call you make and every single thing you do. So if you have information, don't talk about it. Don't share it with people. And I said, and I'll get back to you. So I spoke with a friend of mine who has the power to get inside information, and we drove out there, and by the time we got out there, they had been arrested, been taken away, and because they just couldn't help but talk, and their phones were monitored, their cameras confiscated, it was almost 2 years before one of them got out of detainment with no charges against them. So that was just one of the experiences I had. And, of course, they said it was just a light plane that had crashed. But then you start talking with people and see if this was like plane crash, then why did they have all these national security people in these trucks and the people in the white outfits? Anyhow, a whole lot more than that. And we will do another program on this. Let's go to our calls. And we have Luann Panessi on. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Wow. Talk about now for something completely different. We weren't expecting that, I bet. I just wanted to make a comment on yesterday's show, which your guest was very, really amazing. And it brought up a bunch of memories for me about my own journey with personal, you know, detoxification. I mean, I had poisons in my mind, in my behavior, in my body, in my environment, and I didn't know, I didn't realize, or I realized and didn't understand what I could do about them. And I went to your retreat in Tioga, Texas. This was back in the mid-90s. And I remember the first week was overwhelming for me. I realized that everything that gave me a sense of security, my work as a nurse administrator, predictability in my relationships, getting acceptance from my peer group and my family, were all these myths that were based in non-authentic energy. Now, when I realized that, I went into a state of mental chaos. I was utterly confused. And then I became angry that I was conditioned with this gross insensitivity to my own divine nature, which was, I was always very assertive, and I could see the big picture when I was doing problem solving, and I didn't understand why people couldn't see this is what needed to get done. So I was unfortunately, you know, taught with the fear of God, you know, to continue on feeding the people in my health community, the hospital associations, the FDA, the AMA, for fear of I'd lose my income, my benefits, and therefore my lifestyle. And yet, with the right support down in your ranch, I ended up staying a second week because I was that kind of disoriented to who the heck I was and what the heck I was doing on the planet. And all that chaos and confusion, Gary, evolved into a whole new life for me, where I chose to nurture that mental clarity, this new mental clarity, and I focused my behavior on, you know, really understanding what the heck I was doing and where I was going to go next. It brought out an authenticity in my nature that I kind of always knew was there, but I always had a fear of expressing it. That sacred ferocity that your guest spoke of, I thought that was just absolutely profound. So in the past, while I had been assertive in nature, I was more self-righteous, and it was all coming from fear. Now my behavior is more of that fierce activist coming from a place of universal love. And it's why I believe some people that are new to your show and to your lectures, when they hear your passion, they could perceive it as, man, this guy is angry, because that's the only context they have for passion in that context. So even though I know now that you're speaking reason with a backdrop of passion for seeking and expression and expressing the truth, you know, versus the utter fiction that we get from our government and our corporations and our media. So I want to thank you for that piece yesterday, personally. It was an amazing piece, very very grounding for me and very humbling for me, you know, to hear that piece.
Good. We'll wrap it up with this, Luann. Most people obsess on issues that deny them the attention to real issues. And when we overattach to anything or anyone, we become confused with our own identity, and that disempowers us, because illusions always disempower, because illusion can never be all that we need it to be, and then we stop seeking the truth where it needs to be sought. And that's what the message yesterday was. Pay attention to what is important and feel your passion. And if you're angry, good. Use your anger in a good way for seeking justice on a social level. And we just don't do that today. And we should. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Have a nice day. Now let's say hello to Utrice Lead. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. How are you?
Good.
Well, we're taking a look at three separate but related stories, believe it or not. about the government resigning in Bulgaria, and then retaking a look at the sequester movement or reaction to it, and then finally the crumbling of the Jackson dynasty in Chicago. They're all related, believe it or not.
All right. Well, I'm particularly interested in this phenomena. If you could address this, it would be nice. We talk about how much the government is actually going to cut expenses, but it's all mathematical alchemy. They build into every single bureaucracy a cost of a living adjustment, and it could be anywhere from 3 to 5% per year. And they've been doing this for the military and defense establishment for several decades. So if they say they're going to cut something, in reality, they're never actually cutting the existing system. They're not correcting it. And every study shows that we have at least 50% redundancy and duplication in every bureaucracy. Same.
Well, actually, there's no
thing.
Reason for me to do this show. You've been doing this to me lately. I have to file a formal complaint with you.
What is?
Because now my show is done.
I don't think so. I think you have
yes,
a lot
that's
to say.
Exactly where we're going with the Pentagon piece.
Oh, actually. Great. Then I'm going to stay tuned and keep listening. Utrice Lead coming right at you in just a moment.